listening to Viral Podcasting, the place to go to learn how to generate a six-figure income or more from your podcast. To get the latest tips and information, go to viralpodcasting.com.
Welcome. You are listening to Viral Podcasting. I'm Carrie Lutz. This is show number 25. Well, there's a lot of people doing podcasting now. A lot of you out there might think that things are always the way they were, but the true pioneers of podcasting literally started out without knowing anything that you know now. Really, it was a question of grasping in the dark and not knowing whether your efforts were going to pay off, whether you were going to be a success, or whether you would just be talking to five people. A person like that got on right now, one of the pioneers of podcasting. His name is Todd Cochran. The company, what company should we say here, Todd? Blueberry or?
Raw Voice is the parent company of Blueberry, but everyone knows us by Blueberry. But yes, hey, thanks for having me on too.
Hey, well, we're really thrilled to have you. And thanks for adapting to the time difference. We're a lot of hours apart right now, but obviously, you wrote the first book on podcasting, so you couldn't write a book without having kind of figured out how to do podcasting. Just tell us how you got started in this journey.
Well, it was pretty amazing. I was, I'd been a blogger, and I always tell people I'm not a really good blogger, but I had 300-400 people maybe a day reading the blog. And I was active duty in the military and had always worked kind of in the online space. I had a bulletin board back in the old days. So, that's really dating me. But
really,
I got hurt in the military and I got laid up. And when you're hurt in the military and laid up, they want to make sure that you're going to be viable and able to earn your paycheck. So I basically volunteered, and you're never supposed to do that in the military, volunteered to go to Waco, Texas to do contract enforcement during my recuperation. And I was wearing one of those body brace clasps, basically it had broken my back. And off to Texas I go, and it's 100 degrees in the shade, and spend a lot of time in my hotel room when I'm not at work. And I'm hearing about this thing called podcasting, and I said, man, I love to tell stories and talk. So I ran over to Walmart, which is really directly across the street, and I picked up a LabTech headset for $14.95, and I recorded my first, 3, 4, 5 episodes right in my hotel room. And really, and did everything wrong in the beginning. Played AC/DC for a beginning intro. Ooh. And all kinds of crazy stuff. But we really didn't know when there was no formula for success, because I was probably one of the first. Well, I always say I was one of the first 100, but I was probably more closer to the first 50. And that was really kind of how it got kicked off. And what was amazing. And it does pay a little bit to be early in a space. The show went from zero to what we think at the time. And then those numbers probably weren't as high because we had no real measurement system then besides some raw log data. We think the audience went to about 45,000, and probably in reality it was half that, but you didn't care. It went skyrocketing, and I said, oh my God, there's something here.
Yeah, that was a viral. That was a viral podcast for its day, and everything was primitive. Basically, you had to create your own solutions as far as creating an episode and posting it, and then getting the word out. How did you? It had never been done before, or done very limited. What was your key, your secret sauce for doing this?
Well, remember, this is pre-Facebook, pre-Twitter. There was none of that out there. So the blog was it. The blog and forums where people hung out and talked about the topic that I was doing, and I was doing tech. But the few listeners few readers I did have on the blog were spreading the word. And they helped, really, just like any other viral video, viral podcast. It's really the people, that you listen, this, oh my, what is this? And they tell their buddies and their friends about it. And the next thing it just spreads like wildfire. And that's really what it happened. But you're right. There was no PowerPress to do the RSS feed. There was no you know, unlimited hosting. You know, I had like 10 shared hosting accounts, and I had to move the media like every 3 days because we ran out of bandwidth. It was crazy.
Yeah. So there was no hosting, and obviously your shared hosting services didn't like the fact that you're like loading down their servers, because podcasting is very server intensive. It's a bandwidth hog for a server, and then you get to a point where I guess it becomes impossible to spread the traffic around, right?
Well, we were basically burning the bandwidth, and every 3 days we had to change the links in the blog post to the next, because I had all these domains: Geek News Host One, Geek News Host 2.com, Geek News Host 3, like that, just to dump the media. And then you burn the 500 gigs or whatever they allowed in the account, and then you moved everything so you wouldn't get charged, and you're over there for 2 or 3 days. It was, but that's what we had to do. There was no other real option, and no one was making money in the very, and this was, I was coming out of pocket every month for, you don't even want to know what we were coming out of pocket in the beginning. And of course, that led to the conversation with the wife, but, yeah, it was nuts.
Okay, so why do you think your show caught on? What was it about the way that you did your show? Put aside the promotion, because that was limited, but there was something about your show that captured your audience's attention that made people want to listen to you. What do you think it was?
It was raw and real. You know, from the very beginning, it was just, you know, this is my heart out on the platter here. I'm dumping to the audience my thoughts and what I feel. And, you know, I'm doing a tech show and I'm talking about news of the day, and I'm on blast sometimes. I'm on a soapbox. I'm, you know, questioning the motives. And we even talked about, you know, things at that time. It was, you know, Napster was getting taken down because of the, you know, the MP3 stuff going on. And we were talking about the, you know, the all the folks that were getting sued. And, you know, so it was just, you know, it was really the rawness of the content and being, there was nothing. You got to remember, those that are in podcasting space know that we have this all dynamic relationships with these audiences, and that we're right there with them, and they've made a conscious effort to subscribe. Nothing like that existed at that point. It was all controlled media. And this was media really out of control. And that's what really, it was brand new, and people were excited about being able to, you know, basically, and at the time, synchronize the media that we are creating to a little more portable media device, and ultimately the iPod, and, you know, all that. So I think that was a huge part of it. It was just because it was like, kind of like, I don't know, when MTV launched many, many, many years ago, that was like, wow, that was an amazing channel. Every music lover was on MTV. It was kind of the same thing in those early days. Even everything was kind of like, wow, this is wild and crazy. And it's, it was almost like pirate radio, but we weren't pirate radio. We were basically sticking our middle finger up at the man, saying, you can't stop us. We're doing this without you.
Hey, and you know, I can relate to that, because I always wanted to be on the radio, have my own show. And I realized that no one in their right mind was probably going to hire me. So I would have to buy my own radio station. And then when podcasting came out, I said, hey, I don't need a radio station. All I need is a podcast and the ability to market it. And I can do better than a radio station. And here I am 7 years later, and it totally played out. So what you see with podcasting now, as opposed to when you started out, when you were pioneering and getting the arrows in your back, there's so many podcasts, probably most of them shouldn't exist, but hey, it's a free marketplace of ideas. What do you feel about the current state of podcasting?
I think the opportunity that I had to create something cool and unique is there for anyone that wants to start. Even today, I'm bullish on podcasting, because if you have a passion, and you don't necessarily have to have a great voice, I don't. If you have a passion for a topic and a subject, there's no reason why a show cannot be successful. But we live in a, you know, now a 280 character world. We have to understand that, you know, when I started, even though the audience jump was big at the beginning, You know, it took a while to build that to a point where it was a sustainable show that paid the bills, and that wasn't done overnight. That took many, many months and really years to get it to the point where it was sustainable. But I think today, if someone says there's too many shows about this, I'm like, well, they haven't heard your voice. What do you have to offer that is unique? And, you know, it's the golden rules of being consistent, putting out great content is, you know, is still going to win the day. You know, sustained superior content will build you an incredible audience.
All right. So you look at the top podcasters today. How much of their success is due to their talent?
Well, I think you have to have a certain level of talent to be able to engage people. You have to be able to tell stories, and you have to be able to, you know, what you want is you want your listeners not necessarily being sitting on the edge of their seats, but you want them to sit up a little more. And if they're at work, you want them to pause. You want them to be paying attention to what you have to say. I think that's the key. You have to engage. And there is an art to engaging. If you're kind of slow and talking like this, you know, that's not going to get it. You know, you better do some jumping jacks before the show. Get your, you know, your blood pressure up and wake up and be ready to entertain and also provide good information. I think that's really a big part of it.
Entertainment is definitely key. I think a lot of people would never admit that they tune into a podcast because they want to be entertained. But I think that's a base requirement for every podcast. If you're not entertaining, you're going to get turned off.
You know, what I also find, I've been doing this a long time, just past 13 years, going on to 14 now, is what I found is that people listen for a couple of years, they go away for a couple of years, they come back. So no one is going to capture 100% of the people listening to their show all the time. They're going to come and go. But most podcasters don't get to that point because they quit before that listener comes back. So, and plus, I guarantee you, episode 1241 sounds a lot different than episode 1 did back in the early days. So the show's always involving learning the trade, finding your voice, all those things. You know, this, if you've never pulled up a mic, which the majority of podcasters have never been on mic, then you have to, you know, you have to find your voice and learn your battle rhythm when doing a show. People that are, a lot of the shows that come out of the gate, they're very, very successful. They've had a couple of things going for them. Number one, they're a celebrity. Number two, they've got a well-established network already. They've had some, you know, public speaking. You know, there's something usually that it's very rare that someone that has never done any type of a show before will be very good at it in the beginning. You have to do it to become better.
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, when I first started doing it, I was also doing a radio show concurrently. And once a week, I realized once a week, it just wasn't going to cut it. I really had to up my game and do it professionally full time. And I started it. I still remember the date when I did nothing but podcasting for my career. It was June 7th, 2012. I think it was 2011. No, 2012 it was. And, you know, hey, things just totally took off from there. It just became the focus of what I was doing. So focus really is important, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, and I actually bought on Amazon, I bought some, you know, later on, not even like, you know, immediately, but I bought some broadcaster books on how to be a good broadcaster and took some of those true hard lessons from the guys that, you know, were just famous, you know, radio broadcasters. And I said, read through and kind of looked through their tips and tricks of what they did. And I go back to that once in a while and look at it and remember, you know, we always have to remember that even though you and I are having a discussion right now, we are in someone's head. You know, there are people that have got headphones plugged in right now. Mm-hmm. They're listening, and we're as intimate as it can get when it comes to having a conversation. So because we're whispering in someone's ear, we need to be respectful of their time, respectful of their sensibilities. We have to, it's just like talking with a friend. We have to remember that they are right there dialed in with us. And if you keep that in mind at all times, man, it'll really make it. And if you focus on a one-to-one conversation, that is going to be, and you can't always make the person feels like you're talking just to them. But if you can go to that level and keep that mindset, that's what you're really doing. You're talking to one person. And most of the times very intimately, because they're plugged in and they may have a speaker on their desktop or something like that. But still, it's this podcasting medium's all different. They've done a direct purpose to listen to you. You know, they purposely pressed play. They didn't come over the radio speaker to listen to you. And that's a big, big difference in this space.
Yeah, it's much different than when you're in your car stuck in traffic. Before we had smartphone integration in most cars, you would go from station to station and you were a captive market. But here with podcasting, it's purely consensual, voluntary. People look at you and they decide to engage. There's a conscious decision, and that makes your bond to your audience much stronger than just plain radio.
Yeah. You know, and I've shared some health things with my audience. My last episode, I've been going to the gym for the past 10 months and lost quite a bit of weight. And, you know, so I was talking about some of the blood results I had with the doctor and all that stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't do that on a radio, but I'm willing to do that with my audience because my audience is really kind of my extended family. So I guess it depends on how you do your show. But, you know, I try to be as conscious as possible of remembering to talk to them, not at them.
Right.
And I do video, so it's even more, I do video as addition to audio, so it's an additional layer. I have to be even more conscious of it because sometimes I'll be like, well, look at this. Well, the people that are listening can't look. So I have to rephrase it like, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to show this on the screen, but the link to this page will be on the show notes for those of you listening. And consciously remember to, you know, look, let them know I know they can't see what I'm talking about. So with that, you also have to be very descriptive in everything that you are describing, especially if you're talking about something in the physical world that they can't see.
Yeah, that's such a great point. My mentor is Valerie Geller. She's been big in talk radio for forever. She was the program director of WABC-AM, the biggest talk show station in the country during its ascendancy. And people who are household names were the hosts that were on her show. And, you know, she always says she's got a list of 10 things to do, one of which is speaking descriptively, telling stories, tell the truth. That goes to authenticity. Never be boring. Speak visually in terms your audience can picture. Start with your best material. And there's a lot of other things in there as well. But she talks about always ask, what's in this for me, your listener? Is it relevant? Does it matter? Do you care? And can you make the audience care? So how do you make the audience care, Todd?
Well, I want to go back to one point that she said is about being truthful. Any of us that have a significant other, partner, spouse, whatever the category may be, after you've been together for a while, when you're asked a question and you respond, and if you don't tell the whole truth, but nothing but the truth, usually that significant other can detect something's up.
Oh, yes, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And so your audience is going to be the same way. They will smell a rat very, very quickly. So never lie to your audience. It's better not to say anything than to stretch the truth, because they will smell you out in a New York minute. But going back to the question was, how do you engage your audience?
Yeah, well, yeah. How do you make them care is the question.
Oh, I make them part of the process. I ask for their advice and their input, and they don't always give it. But, you know, just like sitting around the kitchen table with a friend, if you like, you're going to ask them, what do you think? What should I do? You know, and that's what you do with friends, right? You ask for advice, and I'm, you don't always have to give advice. You should ask advice too. So, as much as us podcasters would like to think, we don't have all the answers.
No.
And, you have to be willing to go to your audience to ask questions get input. And again, they may not always respond, but I think they feel appreciated at least that you asked. But at the same point, you do have to make sure that if they do respond, you read exactly what they have submitted to you. You know, I've every email that comes in, whether it be a positive input or a negative input, I read those, and then we talk about, and I say we. Isn't that weird? I say we because it's really me, but I always say we because I feel like I'm talking to the, it's like that kitchen table conversation. So that's the mindset I'm in with my audience. I think that's the key to most podcasters' success in getting engagement is asking those questions. And, you know, we all get aggravated sometimes when there's no listener email, but it takes a lot to get a person to, you know, open up the browser or open up their mobile phone and type something to you. But when they do, it's important that you read it and respond.
Yeah, absolutely. So important. And so now you've parlayed what was, I guess, initially a hobby, then it became a passion, and then it became an obsession. And now it's a career and a group of businesses to help other people do what you do. What are you doing now exactly? And with that, we'll talk about monetization as well.
Sure. Well, you know, one thing I want everyone to be clear, I'm a podcaster first, and everything that I did to build Raw Voice and Blueberry was because it was a need I had as a podcaster. And it really was quite that simple. When we first started the business, I needed to be able to do advertising deals across multiple shows and be able to measure them accurately. And I couldn't do it by myself. So that was a big part of the genesis of starting Raw Voice. And believe it or not, and most people don't know this, the team members from Raw Voice came from my listening audience. I said on a show, I said, listen, I've got a business idea. I need a programmer. I need a dev. I need a business guy. I need a lawyer. I want to have a phone call. And 9 days later, a week or so later, I had 9 people on a phone call. We got in and I said, listen, if you don't have a little bit of money to make an investment in a company, I said, this is not for you. And I tried to wean those that would be scared about me asking them for money up front out from the very get-go. And I was left with Brian Yonke, who is our creative director, Barry Kantz, who is our legal finance, another gentleman that's no longer with the company, and Brian knew Angelo. So we basically launched the company over the phone and didn't see each other for the first 6 months. But what that has led to, and almost everything that we do is based upon a simple mantra, is to provide tools and services and literally get the hell out of the way. I mean, just get the stuff so that the podcaster can build their brand, build their IP, build their show, where they are the center focus of attention. And we're just there to provide the tools and services that we need, which include monetization, hosting, stats, a variety of tools with PowerPress. You know, the litany of stuff that we have is basically covers it nuts to bolts. So someone that's coming in today wants to start podcasting can. They can be up and running about 15 minutes with their own WordPress site and the whole nine yards. But the monetization piece was what launched the company, and it was based on I got GoDaddy as a sponsor in July, or actually May, June of 2005. The key words the lady said to me over the phone was, do you know anyone else who would want advertising? And I said, yes. It's that old montage. Would you rather make 100% of your own income or 1% of 100 people's income? I said, there's a rev share business here, and a company and idea was born. So for many, many years, it's all we did was advertising. And then I kind of saw the handwriting on the wall with the way the economy was going in 2008. And I said, we need to diversify in case and also some big shows were starting to show up on the scene. You know, in the beginning, there was no big shows. They were all small shows. And so the advertisers were starting to jump on these big shows like Corolla and other folks. And the money was starting to shift. I could see it going from the small shows and rolling up into the big shows. So we made the shift, and it was a successful shift in bringing on the new service and stuff. But where we're at today is that the big shows are sold out. They're full. They have about as much advertising as they can handle. I know one show is doing 5 ads. He can't do any more. He's chock full. and his show's sold out for the next year. Well, now the media buyers that have increasing budgets in the podcasting space, they're starting to say, what else is out there? And Todd raises his hand and says, I've got 5,000 shows we can monetize today. And that's literally what we do, is we help. And I don't want to call those shows second tier, because for me, they're the first tier shows in our company, but we help really shows that have audiences from 1,000 to 250,000, but very few companies deal with anyone less than 10,000. And I would say that the 10,000 to 1,000 listeners makes up the meat of the folks that I work with. And I don't care what the show size is, as long as the content matches the advertiser. Hey. And we've got a system to be able to scale really, really wide with a lot of shows. So the money's starting to roll down, and it will continue to increase. And there's some changes coming to the space, and I think podcasters have to be cautious of it as well. There's a word called programmatic that is good and bad at the same time, but we're going to do our best to hold the line on, you know, basically the cost per thousand that we're able to pay podcasters. And on the host endorsement is still basically the golden ad spot. That's always going to demand the highest amount of money. So, you know, that is, you know, the space is changing, but shows that want to monetize, I always tell them, is that the main goal of your show, was to monetize? And if it is, great. If it's not, let's focus on the main goal. But, you know, I get shows that are brand new. They've done 3 episodes. They want to monetize. And I'm like, you're not ready.
I don't think so. Hey, well, you know, you make a great point there that monetization, I find in this space for myself, can't be the goal. It's got to be the byproduct of you doing an amazing show, rather than say, I'm going to go make $1 million.
Right.
And how do you, new podcasters, right, to Todd, often don't understand that, do they?
No. And, you know, and I have, you know, I always tell podcasters, you know, if you're just doing your podcast, if you're just doing that, your chances of success are much lower. You have to do more. I'm old school. I believe you should be writing stuff on your blog for non-podcast days about your topic. Give your listeners a reason to come back to the site. You need to be reaching out to local radio, local TV, which can lead to national. You need to be attending trade show events in the topic that you're covering, and you know, creating new content at those shows and making relationships. And, you know, there's really, you have to be, if you're going to be a content creator in a podcasting space, you can't just be a podcaster. You have to expand out, and because what you're building is authority. Without authority, you're not going to really grow your show. And to build authority, that's, you've got to get out there and be seen in more places. You got to be speaking at events. You know, it's a whole package that you have to develop over time. You don't have to do it out of the gate. But, you know, I'm on the call list for the BBC. And I live in Hawaii. Why would the BBC call me? Well, BBC has news and information in Asia Pacific. So who gets called when they need a tech question answered? I'm on the air for 2 minutes at 3 o'clock in the morning. But I'm out there, and guess what I get to say when I'm getting ready to go out there? By the way, this is Todd Cochran from Geek News Central, geeknewscentral.com. Please listen to my show. I get that pitch in, you know, and how many people hear it? I don't know. But it's, again, building authority, getting my name out there. And podcasters have to do that beyond just doing their podcasts.
Hey, and you indirectly raised an incredibly good point, branding. Okay, what you're talking about there, being an authority, being an expert, the go-to person, branding. Now, one thing I've noticed is that the majority of podcasters, and I will extend this to businesses around the globe, are clueless about branding. I've seen names that are just so bad, Todd, and your name is your first point of contact with your potential audience. Talk about your experience, because I respect what you've accomplished and the number of brands that you've actually built in the podcasting space.
Well, you know, in retrospect, being 2020, why did we pick Blueberry?
I was going to ask you that.
What kind of name is that?
Good question.
You know, and really what it was, you got to remember when we were founded right around the .com day where everyone was using, you know, building company names with no vowels. And, you know, you were trying to find, and also, why didn't I call it the podcast company? Well, at the time, there was a huge, huge debate on the word podcast. There was like, no one wanted to continue to call it podcast because it was so tied to Apple. And you hear that argument even today a little bit. So we settled on the word Raw Voice initially as a company name. And that was like the first 2 years. And then when we decided to build the platform that we built, which is now blueberry.com and which everything's tied to, our subtitle to Raw Voice was Fresh Organic Media.
I don't know about that one.
So there's how Blueberry came into effect. And believe me, we've had this discussion many times. Why did we call it Blueberry? Well, we're 14 and 13 years in. You don't change. You know, you're stuck with your brand, right? So it is important that you really take some thought about what you're going to name your show and to try to get a top level domain that is associated with that show name as short as possible. If that means spending a little money to buy one that might be held by someone else. But I called my show Geek News Central because I had a Geek News Central blog. So it just, it rolled up. But I'm, if you hear me talk at any events and online, you see me, I am huge on podcasters controlling the brand. It drives me absolutely crazy. I mean, insanely mad crazy when I see the show dot theirhost.com. I'm like, oh my God, how do you tell your audience whose brand are you building, yours or your host? So at a minimum, if you're hosting it, theshow.yourhost.com, at least in a minimum, buy a domain and forward it to that page. At a minimum, because your brand is, I believe, is so, so valuable. That's intellectual property that you're going to spend time, you're going to put your heart and soul in building, and you really want to control it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And controlling your brand also means controlling your RSS feed. When you use a host, you don't want them to own the RSS feed, right?
Well, you want a place, and here's my kind of my status on this. You want the ability to be able to move that RSS feed if you have to. I'm still a big believer in controlling the stack of your entire ecosystem. And for many, many years, I've always said that if you control, because what it is you, okay. So Carrie, do you have a car?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. What happens if you lose the keys?
I'm going to be an unhappy person because I've got another set at home.
Right. Are you going to have to go home, or you have to go to the dealer or change the locks? You're going to have to call someone, and you're going to have to go through a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Your feed is kind of like the keys to your car. If you lose the keys, you're really kind of, you can kind of recover, but it's going to take a little while, right? You're going to have to do something. So I've always said that by, controlling the keys to your car, you can guarantee that no matter, you might get in the car, it might not start.
Possible.
but that's a different problem.
Yes. Oh God. It's so funny. Yeah. Having control over your brand, over your name, it just reminds me of that story about the McDonald's brothers where Ray Kroc got hold of got them to agree that, hey, you can have the name McDonald's, and then he wouldn't let them use it.
Right.
And that was just terrible, a real tragedy. And I think you can learn a lot from that, right?
Yeah. And I'm a, I always tell folks to, control your ecosystem. I'll be fair here. Most of the providers, with the exception, I think, of a couple that are out there, if you decide to leave them, they will forward your feed, sometimes for free, sometimes for a fee. Mm-hmm. And there is the ability now at least to go into the Podcast Connect site and make, drastic changes if you're in, totally desperate to move your feed. You may lose listeners if you do it that way. So there is a proper way to move your show around when you move so that you don't lose listeners. But I sleep very good at night knowing for the past really 14, 13 plus years that if geeknewscentral.com goes down, that's on me, but I still have the ability to bring the site back online and not lose anybody in the process.
Yeah. And that's really important. You got to own your brand for sure. And so, future of podcasting, where are we heading here? what's going to happen next?
Well, you know, I'm seeing a shift a little bit in the content creators, and we're getting a lot of new folks. You know, growth is still strong and steady. I don't think it's maybe exploded, but, you know, growth is strong and steady. But we have a lot of podcasters that don't know the 101, you know, the podcast 101 basics of the some things that we've talked about right here. You've got podcasters now that are, they're on a certain platform and this is their home. This is where their show lives. And I always cringe because they're just doing a show. And I also understand maybe that's all they want to do. So I'm cool with that. But if your goal is to grow and to build a show, you really, again, going back to control that brand, control that destiny. But, and don't complain about your audience numbers growing if you're not doing some of these things we've talked about today. But I think the future is strong for the podcasting space. I really do. I, you know, there's always movements to change things here or there, but, you know, the basis of how content is being consumed and syndicated isn't changing. We've got some new players that are trying to jump into space, but, you know, in the entire time that I've been in the podcasting space, no one has successfully integrated podcasting into a music service. Mm-hmm. So I'm a doubting Thomas when it comes to, yeah, it's cool to say, I'm over on Spotify. That's cool to say, but let's look at your stats and see how many people actually listen over there. It's more of a vanity thing. I want to have podcasters listen in mass, and that is through their mobile device and their app of choice. I think that's still, you know, it's even the statistics that proves out that that's where the majority of your audience is going to come from. I'm not against syndication. Don't get me wrong. I think it should be syndicated everywhere. But don't flip out if Spotify denies your application to be on their site. And don't apply right away. If you're a brand new show, for gosh sakes, get six months of content before you fill out their application, because you get one shot at it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one other thing, and then I have one more question for you. As far as iHeartRadio, they're carrying a lot of podcasts now. In fact, any podcast you can have posted there virtually. What do you see being the future of that type of thing, where radio and podcasting, the barrier or the border between them appears to be dissolving or becoming less solid, if you will?
Well, the handwriting's on the wall. Radio's on a, you know, slow decline. It's not going away anytime soon, but it's on a slow decline. iHeartRadio is carrying massive, massive debt. They've even announced in their you know, in their earnings statements that they have a growing concern to be able to continue. You know, they're cash poor and debt heavy. So, you know, they're going to have to do some creative financing to fix their issues over there. So, you know, we don't even know if iHeart is in its existing entity is going to be around in a year or two. And they're saying that themselves. So, but that doesn't change the fact that radio folks are jumping in. I think it's good because a lot of them are being laid off. You know, a lot of great talk show hosts are, you know, there's no more morning drive is being done syndicated, just like podcasting is. And it's not someone in the local neighborhood that knows the neighborhood. It's some guy, you know, in a five states over that's doing your morning drive. So I think that radio's under massive pressure from digital. If you've got kids that are teenagers, you see it, and they're plugged into their devices, they're not listening to the radio. Oh my God, that's what dad does, you know, and kids don't listen to the radio. So I think that, you know, things are changing. I welcome those brilliant minds and great content creators to the space. I think it's going to make us all step our game up, but iHeart as an actual entity, I wouldn't want to have to be dealing with the financing on that.
Yeah.
But long story short, you know, that talent has to go somewhere. So come on, bring them in the podcasting space.
Yeah, agreed. And they're looking at it for sure. I've had inquiries on my book, Viral Podcasting. How to earn a six-figure income from your show from a number of talk show radio hosts who are telling me I can't make money in the space anymore. The new model of radio stations, if you're not one of the big talk guys, is pay to play. They want you to pay for the privilege of being on their station with their diminishing audience, and then you can go out and sell advertising. But, oh, we're going to keep 4 minutes of the advertising to put our ads that we sell up there. It's a really inequitable and really downright unfair business model that is going to fail in the long run, and you see it now. Final question here, Todd, is you look at YouTube and you look at shared video on the web. It's so much bigger than podcasting. And A, why is it bigger? And B, is there a way for podcasting to match YouTube's reach?
Well, YouTube, you've only got so many hours to watch something. You have a lot more hours to listen to something. So from that aspect, you know, YouTube is a great platform, but the creators over there are having huge challenges in monetizing. Their videos are getting demonetized. If the just for arbitrary reasons. So they've got huge monetization issues over on YouTube right now. But you know, I enjoy looking like guys like Casey Neistat, his videos and those. Amazingly done. But he's a videographer. He's done movies, so he knows how to do great YouTube videos. And there's a lot of production companies over there doing great stuff. I think there's something for everyone, to be honest with you. I think some people like to listen. Some people like to watch. Some people like to read. We're here for that audience that likes to be engaged with us. So as far as will there be a YouTube of podcast, I don't think so. Well, maybe. I don't know. But podcasters' shows are largely spread by word of mouth. You know, sometimes you may get lucky and get discovered on iTunes, but, you know, I don't think that happens. I think it's mostly via Google searches and word of mouth, and participating in communities is how you build authority and build audiences. But, the money you have to, okay, as an example, you have to do millions of views to make a living as a YouTuber. As a podcaster, you only have to have 10,000 of listens, you know, and I say thousands to make a living in podcasting, because it just pays a heck of a lot more, or car payments or house payments or whatever your goal may be with your show, or building a business around your show. You know, there's so many more opportunities, I think, with audio. I think video, I do video, but my audience is split 70-30, you know, 70% right. Listen, 30% watch. Why they watch me sitting behind a desk talking about geek news, I don't know, but that's what they do. It's not something that's going to be compelled and get a million views on YouTube.
Right. I gotcha. So, but on the other hand, any idiot with a smartphone can do a video, no matter how poorly done, right? And they can post it and start getting views. With podcasting, it's not quite that simple, is it?
It's not. And you know, like I said, we can have, at least in our system, someone up and ready to, you know, basically be podcasting in about 15 minutes on the tech side. Creating the content is a whole different situation. But I think it should be, because we're doing deliberate, we're doing engaging content that we have to think a little bit. So I would foresee that podcasters are probably, I better be careful here, probably smarter than the average YouTuber, you know, because really you do have to do some extra work and you have to think. It's just not point to camera and click. You got to be able to create and engage. So, oh man, I'm going to have to, Karen, I'm gonna have to use that one again, man. But anyway, it's, yeah. I think there's a bright future for podcasts, or for podcasters and anyone that can tell stories. We need a lot of storytellers. We really do. People that can make me sit on the edge of my seat and, you know, like, whoa, what's coming next? We need more of that.
Hey, and that's a great point. It's all about storytelling. A good friend of mine, Wayne Allen Root, extremely successful broadcaster, TV guy, bookmaker, odds maker in Vegas, not a bookmaker, odds maker. His favorite saying is facts tell stories sell. And I tell that to everybody who I interview on the show. You got to tell a story, and you got to make it a story that people want to hear about, or otherwise they're just going to go next. And so, so important.
Yeah, when I was in the Navy, I've got lots of stories to tell, but I can't tell them.
Well, maybe we need an X-rated podcast channel or a podcast channel.
It wouldn't be X-rated, but the innocent or the guilty need to be protected. Let's put it that way.
That's great. I love that. And God, you're so on the money here. Well, Todd, it's really been a pleasure, and we got to get going now. But hey, just tell us where we find you and how we can find out about your various services.
Sure. So on the podcasting side, if you're a podcaster, subscribe to the New Media Show at newmediashow.com. I do that with Rob Greenlee. He's a competitor over at Spreaker. So you got two competitors talking on a podcast. It's kind of fun.
That's good.
And then if you want to reach out to me about any services that we have at Blueberry, it's todd@blueberry.com, blubrry.com. If you just want to find out about me, just search for my name, Todd Cochran, and my brand is everywhere. So I'm at the top of the Google search results. The show that launched it all is at geeknewscentral.com. So if you're geeky, techie, tune into that twice a week. Hey. But thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's been a real pleasure. And hey, for more information, go over to viralpodcasting.com. Email me at kl@kerrylutz.com. Any questions for Todd or myself? Todd, we will definitely talk to you again. It's really been fun and quite educational. Great luck, and we'll talk with you soon.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of Viral Podcasting. Be sure to visit us at viralpodcasting.com.